Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state, and in your own backyard. This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. I'm Luke Mathers, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Two Wisconsin communities are getting more than $1 million in federal money to fight the opioid crisis. Nate Wegehout reports.
The funding from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is part of a broad approach to responding to the overdose crisis. Funding was given to communities around Marshfield and Kashina in the Menominee Nation, where deaths from methamphetamine are more common. The money will go toward deploying Narcan and funding programs to support families struggling with addiction. Over 9,500 people in Wisconsin died of an overdose between 2014 and 2021. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
More than 32,000 children in Wisconsin have been taken off Medicaid rolls since May. Renewal applications are required again now that the COVID-19 public emergency is over. William Park Sutherland is with the policy group Kids Forward. He says he's worried now that it's back to school time.
Kids that have stable access to health insurance are more likely to do better in school. They're more likely to be employed as adults. They're less likely to visit the emergency room.
National estimates show 3 out of 4 kids who lose Medicaid coverage are likely still eligible. Experts say many low-income families slip through the cracks due to things like frequent moves or lack of phone or internet service. The First Lady is talking up the Biden administration's efforts to fight cancer. More from Terry Bell.
The president's Cancer Moonshot Government Initiative aims to cut cancer deaths in the U.S. by half in 25 years. In Madison yesterday, First Lady Jill Biden visited Exact Sciences, where they make products that detect cancer early when it's easiest to cure it.
They need to know that help is available, how important it is to get screened and early protection. It can make all the difference between life and death.
Mrs. Biden also held a roundtable about screening and prevention at the Foundation for Black Women's Wellness. Cancer kills women and people of color disproportionately. Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
Efforts to limit what books are included in public libraries are on the rise across the nation. Wisconsin is experiencing these efforts too. A group of people in northern Wisconsin town of Iron River sent an anonymous letter to the community. The letter details a request to restrict the community's public library from promoting and even loaning out LGBTQ materials. The library denied the request, but the anonymous group plans to meet next week to discuss further steps the community can take. The group is considering a petition to remove the books or call for library board members to resign. And that's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Luke Mathers, and this is Civic Media News.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. It could be a record-breaking Labor Day weekend. High heat will kick in today, with temperatures Sunday forecasted to reach the upper 90s, followed by mid-90s on Labor Day Monday. The National Weather Service recommends staying indoors during the peak heat hours and staying well hydrated. It's projected that temperatures will return to normal levels later in the following week. Brookfield, Pewaukee, Waukesha, and the surrounding areas are now connected with a new bike and pedestrian path. Melissa Kay has more.
The Fox River Trail has been officially opened, and it follows the route of the historic Milwaukee and Waukesha Railroad. The 3-mile trail spanning from Pewaukee to Brookfield has been in planning for several years. Its opening was celebrated this week with a ribbon-cutting ceremony led by Waukesha County officials and local authorities.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The Brewers are back in town. Good morning. I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Brewers kick off a Labor Day weekend series with a 3-game set beginning tonight against the Phillies. The crew had a 9-game winning streak that came to an end after losing that series to the Cubs in Chicago. Christian Yelich.
You know, the streaks don't really matter. Those are games in the past. So you got to really prepare for the night in front of you and just take it one game at a time. And you got to look at it as you've won 0 games in a row. You know, every night's a big night from here on out the rest of the season. So we want to get to where we're going. We need to continue to play well and proud of the guys.
Freddie Peralta on the mound tonight against the Phillies' Zach Wheeler. First pitch at 7:10. College football, the Wisconsin Badgers kick off the season tomorrow at Camp Randall Stadium against the Bulls from the University at Buffalo. The kickoff time at 2:30. New head coach Luke Fickell on what he told his position coaches heading into this game.
My challenge to coaches each and every week, no matter what the game is, I don't want too much. It still comes down to who's going to play the fastest, who's going to play the hardest, and who's going to be the most aggressive. Some would say make less mistakes.
NFL, some key Packers players missing practice yesterday. Wide receiver Romeo Doubs with a hamstring, and linebacker Devondre Campbell with an ankle. Last night at Lambeau Field, it was the Packers Hall of Fame induction banquet for Jordy Nelson and guard Josh Sitton.
I wanted to play baseball because it was my favorite sport, and I wanted to play football for the Dallas Cowboys. I didn't get to play for the Cowboys, but I did get to win a Super Bowl in Cowboys Stadium.
Jordy Nelson remembering after the team had won Super Bowl 45.
Being on the field in the confetti with my wife and my son, and then eventually going in that back interview area, and I feel like getting that iconic shot that every dad who's a player and wins a championship wants when their son is sitting on their lap talking about a Super Bowl.
That's Packers Hall of Fame inductee Jordy Nelson. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, like
a
solid, right on.
What's up, man? What's your name?
Good morning and welcome to The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, text us that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Earl. We made it to Friday.
But Calvin, we also made it to September.
That is a good
September
point.
September 1st.
Sandy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the official start of autumn
is... It's a big
is...
month. My birthday falls in September.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well... It's a secret.
Oh. Well, the autumn starts late September.
Yeah.
And so that's the horrific part of it.
We're on the downslope. I'm on the downslope in every way.
Hey, it's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let me make these announcements right quick before we start the show. Civic Media, home of the Badger football. Sandy, did you know we're home of Badger football?
I didn't, but that's exciting.
Yeah, we're home of the Packers, the Bucks, the Badgers, the Brewers.
Wow.
And anyway, all of these things you can hear on WRJN, 1400 AM, 99.9 FM, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, streaming on WRJN on Civic Media. Coverage begins Saturday at 12:30. Kickoff at 2:30 against the Buffalo Bulls.
The Bulls?
The Buffalo Bulls.
Yeah, I see. That's the University of Buffalo.
Yeah. Right. I'm like, the Buffalo Bulls?
I mean, it's pretty close, yeah. But not exactly right.
Well, the Buffalo Bulls, it's kind of, you know.
It's macho. Some,
yeah, know, yeah.
A Buffalo Bull is one big hombre, I'll tell you.
And on Monday, we're going to have a special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. We are going to be at Labor Fest. Calvin and I will be on duty, and that starts from 8 and it goes to 11 a.m. So join us, listen to us. We're going to be interviewing labor leaders from across the state.
Sandy will be celebrating Labor Day.
Yeah, and some political leaders as the conversation about labor. You know, Sandy, I was talking about this the other day. In the 60s, 30% of America
was unionized.
Was unionized.
It's 10% now.
Yeah.
And only 10% of American jobs are manufacturing jobs now. So, you know, most of the unionized people aren't actually even manufacturing jobs.
They're service industry. Yeah, they're service industry or they're tradespeople.
Or public employees.
Or public employees.
Yeah.
And it's not coincidental, Sandy, that, you know, 50 years ago, that you had that 30% of people in unions, and we talked about the middle class and how much people made and the benefits they had. It's not coincidental that once the unions left, that those kind of things left, is it?
No, I mean, you know, there's a whole bunch of things going on. I read an article about Korea's birth rate. This is really a non sequitur seeming, but it's not. And their birth rate is now below, reproduction rate is below one, okay? 2.1 is the reproduction rate it takes to have a stable population, otherwise you're shrinking. And people are scratching their heads. They think about what social things are causing it. One of the biggest social things that's causing it is two worker households, okay? Back in our day, when 30% of the people were unionized and all had middle class incomes as a result, they had single worker households.
Right.
You know, and so birth rates were easier to accommodate in that world. And in today's world, with student debt and the cost of daycare, it's pretty hard for a couple to decide to have children. And as a result, birth rates in all of the developed countries have declined dramatically.
You know, Sandy, the fact that unions have, and some say, well, it's on a rise, you know, I don't see it. I was talking about some statistics yesterday. The thing about the unions back then, Sandy, is that there was not just the people who worked in the union jobs, but all other jobs. It kind of raised the standard of workers who weren't unionized.
Yeah, I mean, the wage scale was brought, you know, all ships.
Yeah,
we floated higher in the higher water of the union wage scale. That was the comparison that everyone had. So, you know, that has had a big social impact, that's why I reached all the way to the fertility rate, because I think it's reached all the way to that kind of a impact on our society. But and we have now devolved, or maybe evolved, depending on whether you think it's going forward or backwards, to a situation where almost every household is a two-income, two-worker household, vastly different than the 1950s and 60s after World War II. And some would say, well, this is the rise of feminism and their equality, but it also has to do with income levels. And the fact is that double-income households have made it possible for employers to get a little more Scrooge-like in the income they pay to individuals, because households have two individuals now instead of one.
Well, you know, Sandy, we're never going back, right? I mean, those times of nostalgia with what we're talking about, where one guy could you know, make enough money to support his entire family, as my dad did with 13 children. My mother stayed home. Those times are never coming back.
Your dad was very, very busy.
Well, he worked, and he worked.
I just meant I know. Working a day job and having 13 children is like, it's night and day.
Yeah, but the other part of it was that my mom could stay home.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we were able to, there was always food on the table. There was always a roof over our heads. You know, we always had clothing, and we always had the needs, the things that people needed, because, he wasn't alone. That was the norm.
Yeah, but I just happen to believe, much like I think student loans have facilitated universities raising tuitions at a rate far faster than inflation, because they had this customer base that could reach into a pocket, someone else's pocket, and pay them a lot of money and sacrifice their future for it. I think that the two-income households in America has allowed the business model in America to devolve towards hourly workers, to devolve towards fewer benefits.
Yeah.
And you know, because the pay of one person wasn't what a family had to rely on, and so the person that was receiving that income wasn't going to fight as hard for higher income. And they weren't going to jump from one job to another to get higher income because of the situation. So, you know, I think two-income households have been a mixed blessing. I think it's something that's logical, but I think that in the long run, we're going to have to adjust how those people earn their money and the extent to which they receive benefits. And I think the government's going to have to step up with respect to benefits.
So you say the government is going to have to step up, but it's the private side of things. Because the government, if you work for the government, you're going to get benefits.
Well, I'm talking about the government as an employer.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about the safety net concept, right. You know, that employers have backed way off on benefits. Pensions backed way off on that. Healthcare benefits backed way off on that.
Right.
And even if you get healthcare benefits now, you contribute a mighty big dollar to it. You know, the idea of getting healthcare at work is the healthcare, the employer allows you to participate one half of the healthcare benefit cost or something like that,
yes.
Which in today's world is a very big cost. So there are a fair number of employees out there who are turning down the opportunity to get healthcare at work because it's just so darn expensive.
So these union people that understand, and so you see when you're at Labor Fest, what you'll see is families and all these guys come and women, and they bring their families, and you see they are enjoying a great life in this country the way my generation used to.
Mm-hmm.
That still exists in pockets, but you know, back in my day, we were a part of Labor Fest where I worked, and all these other major companies were as well. Now what you see at Labor Fest are tradespeople.
Well, you know, I think another way that maybe the government needs to step up, someone has to step up and help to marry the people who need jobs or need better jobs with the better jobs that are available. Because the jobs report that came out just in the last day reveals that there are more job openings than there are people unemployed. Okay?
Right.
And so, and you can talk to almost any provider of trades in the country, and they will tell you they are short workers. They're looking for workers. They're looking, and they're willing to train workers. So what we need is a process, and maybe the government needs to facilitate this process, not make a permanent job of it, but make a temporary function out of finding the people to fill the jobs, helping find the people to fill the jobs, helping train the people to fill the jobs, because that's a function that government can provide. That's a win-win function for everybody.
You know, Sandy, and I think I would say that it only makes sense to me that we start focusing some in high school educations and giving direction and guidance to young people and not, you know, directing all of them to major universities. Because we see there's an overabundance of people who've graduated from universities and have not fallen into jobs that pay them commensurate with living a strong middle-class lifestyle, even though they have these degrees.
Yeah. Well, you know, a place like MATC, there are post-high school educational processes that will set people up very well. And I think what's important is that the people who graduate from high school and matriculate into that do decide that learning is a lifelong process, so that we don't cut off or stifle the intellectual growth of our country, and yet people can live great lives in the trades, for instance. And there's no reason why tradespeople aren't the intellectual equals of everyone else and the educational equals of everyone else.
You know, Sandy, I can't remember the last time they outsourced an electrician or a plumber or steam fitter or any of those things.
Right.
And surely artificial intelligence is not going to replace them. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. My co-host Sandy Williams is here. You can join us at 844-967-2789. We'll be back.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Uh-oh, did a rock hit your windshield from that semi? Don't worry, Autoglass Now offers fast, reliable, and convenient service. For a limited time only, Autoglass Now is offering 50% off windshield replacement. Call your local Autoglass Now today for full details.
When you think about early labor unions, do you think of Wisconsin? You should. The state's first labor union formed in Milwaukee in 1847 when the bricklayers organized, then the Carpenters Union in 1848. The National Labor Union didn't even form until 1866. A State Historical Society report shows Wisconsin's union members also pushed for workers' compensation and unemployment insurance legislation, becoming a model for other states. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Bright sunshine today with a high of 82. South winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Clear skies and quiet again tonight. Lows dip down to about 59. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 89. Temperatures well above average Sunday and Monday with highs in the mid-90s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Hite. Currently, it's 57 degrees.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, did you see Mitch McConnell?
I did see. I saw a video of it, yeah.
Nikki Haley had this to say yesterday, and part of it was kind of cruel. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley urged aging lawmakers to accept when it's time to go after Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell froze up during a press conference in Kentucky on Wednesday. Haley, who is running in the 2024 Republican presidential primary, called McConnell's situation sad. She also said Thursday, where she described the Senate as the most privileged nursing home in the country. I think that was a bit.
Well, it might be cruel, but, you know, the fact is that the inability of people in power to hand the reins over to the next generation is startling, you know. And I saw a piece about when they were, I guess this whole McConnell thing has brought to light, brought up the fact of elderly people serving, you know, the Jesse Helms serving until he was 100.
And what was the other guy's name? Democrat, he was almost 100. What was the guy's name? He used to be a Republican and he became a Democrat.
Bird?
Senator. Yeah.
Yeah. Robert Bird.
He was almost 100.
Well, I mean, it's the list is not short. It's not short enough. Let's put it that way. And, so, you know, I think that something needs to be done. I don't know what we do about it exactly, other than maybe the public needs to start being more vehement about wanting the, you know, people like older people can make great counselors. They can definitely, their wisdom can be tapped. They just don't need to be the ones holding the office, you know, and that's the problem. We've got the people holding the office are the ones that are maybe somewhat enfeebled and they've got people behind them who want them to continue in office because that's their nexus to power, right? I'm powerful because I'm chief of staff to Mitch McConnell. Okay, so Mitch McConnell's got to stay there as long as possible for me to be that powerful person.
You know, Sandy, you use the verbiage holding the office. That's literally what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and it is time that you know, younger people with brighter minds, well, not brighter minds, but younger people who clearly, that was the time when those guys were young.
Well, here's the difference. Older people have a past they can look back on that gives them lots of wisdom, but they don't have a future to look forward to. Young people have a future that they need to look forward to and plan for, and they don't have the wisdom of the past. Sir. So we need to figure out a way to connect those two dots. And I think right now, unfortunately, what we've got is the young people in the background and the old people in the foreground. And I think we need to turn that around. And we need to have, you know, I think the wisdom of the elders needs to be there to be tapped into. But the people who are going to live in the future need to be the people who plan the future.
You know, Sandy, you always talk about the baby boomers and hanging on and those kind of things. You always talk about that. But in this instance, people are voting for these people.
Yeah.
They continue to vote for them even after.
Well, you know what the biggest voting block is, though?
Yeah, the elderly. I mean, the
baby boomers.
The baby boomers, yeah. Well, all baby boomers aren't elderly. So.
No, well, yeah. But the baby boomers are still the biggest voting block, and they still vote at a high percentage. And so I would guess that they continue to have a disproportionate power at the polls as well.
You know, Sandy, it is... Now Mitch McConnell's doctors say he's okay. But, I've seen it twice, Sandy.
It's kind of like saying nothing happened on January 6th. You know, if you see it with your own eyes, you know, you can diagnose the situation yourself. I mean, Mitch McConnell might be okay in a medical sense that everything's working. But everything isn't working 100% of the time because we've watched him now freeze twice. And it could well be the result of post-concussion syndrome or what have you. But it's just a reminder that we've got, you know, an 81-year-old man. He's not even the oldest person in the Senate by probably a long shot. And we've got people like that who are fundamentally in charge of things. And the same is true with Joe Biden. No, Biden's only a year younger, I think.
There's no question that this is a time now where this needs to not be pushed in the background.
Right.
It's something that needs to be discussed because we are dealing with global issues
And we're dealing with a future, right?
And the
global issues all relate to the future, and we've got global warming, that's a futures issue. We've got electric vehicles, that's a futures issue. We've got everything's a futures issue. And we need people vested in the future to be more responsible for what we're doing. And I think the Democrats have to watch Mitch McConnell and the fact of his clear evidence of age. I'm confident that he won't run again. He's got to make the decision in the next 6 or 8 months whether he's going to run again. I'm pretty sure that decision will be helped to make that decision.
2026.
Yeah. But I'm just saying that the Democrats ought to know that in the shadow of this, subliminal to this, is the analysis of Joe Biden.
No,
right?
No question.
And Joe Biden doesn't freeze in front of the camera, not yet. But the fear of something like that is now going to be implicit in the Joe Biden candidacy.
Because it can happen in a split second, right? Yeah. He could be fine today.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, you can see that.
I'm just saying it's a subliminal meaning, you know, it's undercurrent issue in the campaign henceforth. It was already. Mitch McConnell makes it more so.
All right. Got to go to a break.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Special Report. New jobs numbers just in from the Labor Department. They show employers added 187,000 new positions in August. That's the same as it was the month before, 187,000. Most of the growth was in healthcare, leisure and hospitality, and construction. In a nutshell...
While the job market is expected to soften in the months ahead, it has remained more resilient than expected.
Bankrate's Mark Hamrick.
Monthly payroll gains have averaged 258,000 this year, down from last year's monthly average of nearly 400,000 jobs added a month.
Unemployment was at 3.8% in August. That's up from 3.5% in July. Again, non-farm payroll additions, 187,000 in August, as the Fed ponders yet another interest rate hike at its meeting this month. CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The name of the shooter hasn't been released, but the family of the woman killed in Brookfield this week has put out her name, 34-year-old Sierra Alvarez. Brookfield police were called to a shooting at a residence Wednesday where they found Alvarez dead from multiple gunshot wounds. The suspected gunman, who was in a long-term relationship with Alvarez and shared a child with her, was later found dead from self-inflicted injuries in New Berlin. Political leadership is set to shift on the south side of Milwaukee.
Alderman Mark Borkowski, who has held the position since 2015, has declared his retirement from the Milwaukee Common Council. Borkowski's political career spans over two decades, having previously served as a county supervisor for 23 years. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
If you care about animals or crops, you probably care how the weather could impact both.
It's summer in Wisconsin, and the success of your efforts often depends on knowing the forecast. Count on your local Civic Media weather team for all the information you need.
Crops' roots are also growing deeper in search for water, which is bad news, because when rain finally falls, it will sit shallow and be absorbed in the top layers of the soil.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the app.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
You can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, Ukraine is not going anywhere. You know, It's just not going anywhere. And on Sunday, Vladimir Zelensky says he is open to elections in Ukraine next year if the Western allies help. But he also made this statement, Sandy. Where is it at? That he believes that the United States is going to offer Ukraine the same kind of deal that we have with Israel, and where, you know, financially we still send some financial support and we pledge to support Israel militarily if need be. Where's that thought coming from? Do we have that kind of relationship with Ukraine?
We don't, because Zelensky's apparently asking that we do, and we don't. You know, I think that the relationship with Israel is, it's a long history to it, and Israel was basically founded under the aegis of England and the United States. The treaty that set it up was basically grounded in the UK and the United States' support of it, and so it's a different situation. Furthermore, there is the relationship of the Jewish state Israel with all of the Jews in America is a very close one, and so politically the connection there is sort of guaranteed in that case, in that way as well. But Ukraine. I mean, I can understand the situation in which the United States would stake out some guarantees to Ukraine, but that would be in the context of a settlement of this war. That would be in the context of Ukraine announcing its neutrality in a compromise with Russia in the settlement of the war, and in the context of an announced neutrality where Ukraine is not going to be a member of NATO, then it's going to need security guarantees of some sort. One of the reasons that Ukraine isn't a part of NATO is that Article 5 of NATO requires that all members of NATO commit essentially troops to the ground and do everything in defense of every member of NATO that they would do for themselves.
Right.
So the United States hasn't been willing to make that promise. We've flirted with it in terms of talking to Ukraine about it, but surely Germany and some other members of NATO were never going to let that happen. And so, you know, we aren't at the stage where we're willing to commit troops to the ground for Ukraine today. And so Zelensky, I think, is just off base thinking that we'll make the promise to do that in the future. I can see it happening in the context of a settlement. And I can see the settlement where some of the land would get ceded to Russia that was historically Ukraine in 1991 when Ukraine first broke off as a nation, so that, you know, maybe the Crimea and the Donbass stays with Russia. The rest of Ukraine promises its neutrality with a world guarantee of security, and the United States would clearly play a big role in that. That Ukraine, I can see having a very tight relationship with the West and with the United States in terms of getting rebuilt, getting support, et cetera. But that's a different context than the United States making this kind of Israeli arrangement with Ukraine in the context of today's war.
You know, Sandy, when I read it, I thought, well, we've kind of led Zelensky to believe, based on the fact that we keep supporting them, that, you know, that this is a long-term commitment, that we are going to...
Well, Zelensky's representing his country and doing it very well.
Right.
And, of course, what he wants for his country is everything that he needs and everything that could possibly be there.
And that we can provide.
That we could possibly provide.
Right.
So he wants all of that. And I don't blame him for that. It's just we got to figure out what we're willing to do, what's in America's interest, what's in the strategic interest of America, what's in the world interest, essentially.
Well, we've got America divided on it. And so there's no way I can see that happening. There are just as many people in this country who are as opposed to what we're doing in Ukraine, I think, as there are who say that we should continue.
Certainly the numbers of people in America, I think if you went out and asked people whether Ukraine was in the right and Russia was in the wrong, you'd get almost unanimity that Ukraine was in the right. But when you ask them how much should we be doing for Ukraine? How much money should we be spending? Blah, you know, that begins to winnow away at what people are willing to say about what we ought to be doing. And that's, I think, a correct recognition of the strategic interest of the United States. You know, and so I think what's happening is that members of the public are waking up, at least in their minds, to the notion of setting up priorities for America. And those priorities need to include just where should we be spending tens of billions of dollars of our money to do what?
Well, that's because, Sandy, the American people are hurting.
Yeah.
You know, if the American people weren't hurting, it might be a different story.
Well, Joe Biden just is asking for a $10 billion or $12 billion addition to the FEMA funding, okay? And maybe going to have to fight for it.
Right.
Whereas if $12 billion going to Ukraine happens overnight, with barely a vote. So that, to me, is a demonstration of some disproportion here. The emergency risk to Americans from the natural disasters that FEMA is designed to support us for is subject to dispute about funding, possibly. But we can send tens of billions of dollars abroad to the country Ukraine, and we don't even really know what government will result from this war or exactly what sort of government we were defending in the first place.
You know, Sandy, you just pointed it out in that statement succinctly. That's it. You know, again, there's going to be a struggle to get the $10 billion to help American people. And you know, we just opened up the pocketbook. And I think Americans don't really know what's going on. And they really don't even focus and not paying attention to the amount of money that keeps going to Ukraine.
Right.
And it's a bottomless pit. It's not a bottomless pit, but it seems like it's a bottomless pit. And it's part of this is it's like Republicans are saying, no, we don't. We need to look a little closer. Sandy, I'm on the side of the Republicans on what is happening with Ukraine. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm on the side of skeptics, and I think most of the skeptics are Republicans right now. And I think the Democrats have sort of locked themselves into the neocon thought process. You know, the notion of us expending the kind of dollars we need to expend, I know that KJ would call in and say that we need to defend democracy wherever it exists, but that is a carte blanche expenditure program that we can ill afford, particularly when we've got people wanting to figure out whether what we need to cut in our budget in order to fund FEMA the next $10 billion. FEMA is an insurance policy against natural disasters that should be essentially automatically funded at the level required. And yet it's subject to some dispute. So, you know, I just think that we've got a democracy in our own country that's at risk. Actually, the greatest risk to American democracy right now, I think, rests at home. It rests in the courtrooms. Ongoing disputes right now in courtrooms are taking up the issue of the defense of American democracy.
You know, Sandy, you have constantly talked about Crimea and the importance of Crimea.
To Russia.
Yeah.
It's a very important place, yeah.
So in today's Newsweek, Crimea remains the grand prize in Ukraine's efforts to defeat Russia's full-scale invasion of the country. The former commander of U.S. Army Europe has told Newsweek as Kiev's troops continue to slow southward push that could prove pivotal in shaping the conclusion of the nine-year conflict, thought to have claimed hundreds of thousands of lives, that Crimea is still... As long as Crimea is what it is and Russia has that stranglehold on it, this is never going to come to an end if Ukraine is still planning on saying, we're going to take Crimea back, and that it can never end as long as they keep saying that because Russia has such control over Crimea.
Well, I think Crimea is the prime playing card that both sides are playing the game about.
They can't.
Well, they both can't have it, and I don't think Ukraine really thinks they can recover it. But I think Ukraine needs to be able to threaten Russia with the notion that they might recover it. First of all, taking Crimea back would involve something like occupying a bit of a foreign country. Crimea is filled with Russian speakers and has Sevastopol in it, which is the Russian fleet warm water port. And so there's a great deal of Russian influence in Crimea. And I think one of the reasons that it was allowed to slip away so quickly in 2014 was the fact that it had this highly Russianized kind of it was a Russian-speaking area that had been traditionally part of Russia until 1954, and that it was different in some respects than the rest of Ukraine. So I think that Ukraine will continue to talk about it. It will continue to threaten to take it over. It will continue to make military incursions into Crimea, because one of the prime playing cards it has in a negotiated settlement with Russia is the threats that it can make to Crimea, because Crimea is the most important thing as far as Russia is concerned.
You know, Sandy, it's at a point right now where Putin knows the value of that, and Zelensky knows the value of it. But if that's going to be the stickling point, and Ukraine is going to say, as Zelensky has said, we want it all back, the United States at some point in time is going to come to a realization, as long as they're saying they have to take that back, this is never going to end.
Well, interestingly, it was probably a year ago Blinken said that taking back Crimea was beyond the goals that the United States felt were probably reasonable to expect. I think we've sent messages already that we don't believe that we can tolerate supporting the war that would be required to take Crimea back. I think we've sent that message, and I think I've always thought that was the fact. Okay, that taking Crimea would be a very huge military problem, and then it would be a long-term problem after a war. Even if Ukraine won the war, it would be a long-term problem after that war.
And it could never happen without the financial support of even thinking about taking Crimea back of the United States,
well,
right?
I mean, absolutely. The Allied support would have to continue at least the level that they currently have. I mean, they aren't even fighting in Crimea right now. They're fighting at the edge of Crimea. What they're trying to do is cut the land bridge that allows for the easy supply of Crimea from Russia to try and that alone would be a pretty significant playing card. If they can cut through to the Sea of Azov and cut off the land bridge to Crimea, then Crimea is made more vulnerable, and maybe it would be at that point that Russia would decide that negotiation was a good idea.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information.
A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Highs level off around 82 this afternoon under sunny skies. Winds out of the south, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Clear skies and quiet again tonight. Lows dip down to about 59. A mix of clouds and sun tomorrow. Highs level off around 89. Temperatures well above average Sunday and Monday with highs in the mid-90s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 57 degrees.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday is my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to CJ. Good morning to you, CJ. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. Thank you for taking my call. Crimea is a symbol of weakness from another Democrat president. When he did nothing with the red line, and that was President Obama. Biden shows his age all the time that he's not qualified and well enough. You speak about someone who's functional and not functional, shakes hands with air, can't find his way off a stage, and he can't go off teleprompter without talking about his kitty cat like he did in Maui, when those peoples were in a disastrous situation. Shameful that your party still wants him to run for another 4 years. He's not functional. You know, the way he handled the 13 Gold Star families, or he hasn't even commented about those people. It just blows my mind that 70% of your own party doesn't want him to run. But you won't let them debate. You won't let them primary.
Wait.
And Ukraine is a symbol of his weakness from Afghanistan. Remember, he said he's the only one that could go toe-to-toe with Putin. Well, Ukraine, and we couldn't use that $87 billion that he left behind in Afghanistan.
How much did he leave behind? Wait, CJ, how much did he leave behind?
$87 billion
of equipment. No, CJ. You can go and look. You've got a decimal point. It's $8.5 billion, okay? Not you must have been listening and not reading when you've been saying that number for a long time. So I decided to go back and do some research on it. And the estimates are between seven, the Pentagon said seven. Now the people who are critical are saying $8.5 billion. But go ahead, CJ. Go ahead with the rest of what you have to say.
What about Bagram Air Base? What about that, Sandy? Our most strategic air base in the entire region. He gives it to China.
China's not occupying. Thank you so much for calling, CJ. Do we have another caller?
We do.
Oh, good. Okay. Thanks, CJ.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to David from MEC1. Good morning to you, David. How you doing, man?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Yes,
really quickly, I read this morning, I'm not sure if it was in the Independent, that Putin is making the Satan 2 ballistic missile to put that into action. And I guess that particular ballistic missile is able to carry up to 10 nuclear weapons. It was just announced this morning. So my concern is, as we see this slowly escalating between, you know, obviously some of the NATO countries, you know, they're going to supply U.S. authorized to have the F-16. To be sent, and they will train the Ukrainian pilots to do what they have to do. My concern is this, is that, you know, this right now is a proxy war. And so while we don't technically have U.S. soldiers right now, you know, fighting Russians, you know, toe-to-toe, and Earl has mentioned this in the past. I mean, there are only so many Ukrainian soldiers that are going to be able to put up the fight. And there has been, from what I understand from what the Pentagon has said, is, you know, there's been tens of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers that died. Russians, of course, you know, there's been a lot of those that have died. And I've been reading more about, you know, what the Abrams tanks that we're going to be sending over. There's problems with that tank. I didn't realize how old that particular tank is. It was built in the early 1990s, and it uses a turbine engine. And it only can last, it only has about 8 hours of time before it has to be refueled, as opposed to having a newer diesel engine that might be partially electric where it could run around for 24 hours. So, and I guess it leaves a tremendous thermal image because of the heat that this turbine engine is. So they potentially could be easily picked off. And the other thing that's happened that I noticed, Annie, and I'm not sure if you read about this, is that the Russian military now, they've been able to produce 24/7 the emissions ammunition that is needed to continue this war, whereas the United States, right now, we do not have that ability in doing so, and it would take months to get it up to capacity if that were to happen. So I am definitely concerned that, you know, as this slow escalation has been, you know, going up and we're using more and more advanced stuff, that this potentially could bleed over into some NATO countries, and then you got a full-out complete war. I don't know what your thoughts are, but that's what it seems like, where it's just right, like a chess match.
Let's let Sandy respond.
Well, that was my concern on day one of this, which was that by the United States sort of setting the table for Ukraine to thumb its nose at Russia, with Ukraine being in the clear geographic sphere of influence of Russia, that we were essentially setting bait in a trap, but we might be trapping ourselves. Yes, Russia invaded, which in a way put Russia into a world corner, but unless we're willing to back Ukraine, what we're really doing is supplying Ukraine as long as there are Ukrainians to fight. So we're helping Ukraine fight to the last Ukrainian, which is and then the outcome of the war isn't going to be successful for Ukraine in that circumstance. So we started a game without an end game, and that's what I was talking about last Friday, was the inability of America to apparently have end games in mind when we set down a road, whether it be foreign policy or our domestic policy. And that the road that we set down and are now involved with in Ukraine does have the definite potential of bleeding over. You know, Poland sits right there with Belarus. Lukashenko is currently sitting on his hands pretty effectively, in spite of getting pressure from Putin, I'm sure, to become more involved. But we also have Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, countries that are right there, tucked up into Russia. So yeah, we're in dangerous terrain right now.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Steve ain't gonna leave it out. folks, I tell you this much. The Cripescast is just the butter on my cheese.
Cockroaches, not that bad. They call them palmetto bugs in South Carolina. Same thing. You can call them up here.
Are they really palmetto bugs?
Yes. Yeah, and they're a great source of protein. They're going to be the lobsters of the future.
They also got salmonella, and they can lay like 40 eggs at once.
Well, they got to work out a few kinks there, okay? They got to work out a few kinks.
Cripescast every Saturday and Sunday at noon across Civic Media and on the Civic Media app.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Follow Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.